267. Okay. We're in NTI Romans chapter 6. And Leticia. Did I say it right? At least my best. I'll do my best. Just so you know what this is, what happened for me, I studied A Course in Miracles. In a 13 and a half month period, I did the workbook, so it took me a little longer than a year. I did the workbook. I read the text twice and the manual for teachers twice. I did that in a 13 and a half month period. 3 days after I finished the course, when I was in meditation, I received an inner guidance to read the New Testament and to allow it to be interpreted for me. I was also guided to quit my job and move to another location. So I quit my job and I moved from Massachusetts to North Carolina. And after I got settled there, one morning I heard, it's time to begin. So what I did for the next 13 and a half months, the same number of months, was I got up each morning and I read from the Bible, starting with Matthew. And after I read from the Bible, then I would, let go of anything I thought it meant. And when I was completely empty, then I just heard an inner dictate, and all I did was take notes, just like a secretary takes notes when their boss is talking, or at least the way they used to. I guess they don't do that anymore, probably, huh? And so that's what this is. And so we started in this group. We've been meeting for a little over a year. We started with NTI Luke, so we skipped Matthew and Mark here in this group. We did all of Luke, then we skipped John, and we did all of Acts. And now we just started Romans like about 3 weeks ago. And so we're on NTI Romans chapter 6. And this is what it says. Jesus is a symbol of all that is possible with you, because Jesus lived as a symbol of all that is true with you. Jesus was the symbol of life, perfection, love, wisdom, innocence, and devotion. This is true of you. This is your truth. Jesus was the symbol of your truth. Jesus is a symbol of all that is possible with you, because Jesus lived as a symbol of all that is true of you. You are Jesus, and Jesus is you. There is no separation between him and you. You know this if you close your eyes. For when you close your eyes, you can find him there. He is a part of you, within you, a being within your soul. I'll just stop right there for a moment. It's interesting because, you know, most people, in a Christian society, you know, people just talk about Jesus, you know, like they know who he is, and you know, they just talk about him and think about him and pray to him, you know. But nobody ever really stops to notice that everything that they think they know about Jesus, or everything that they feel they know about Jesus, no matter what it is, quote, right or wrong, unquote, is within them. You know, none of us have ever met a body named Jesus. You know, you can't actually put Jesus outside of you. I can put Dave outside of me. I have a perception of a Dave over there in that chair. I have a perception of a Dave who's going to go to his house on Lake Avenue, and I'm going to go to my house on Stallion Drive, right? But I can't put Jesus outside of me, and I never have been able to put Jesus outside of me. I've just never taken the time to notice that. So, yes, go ahead.
I think about the religions, because I was Catholic. I put Jesus outside of me because I believed that Jesus was the man that everybody said that he is. That is a picture that the majority people draw.
Yes.
Know? And then, like me, there are a lot of people that think that Jesus is the Son of God, that those are people outside.
Yes.
That is a huge man. And Jesus is his son. but I'm not the daughter of the God, you know?
Right, right.
That is the way that I thought. And like me, there are a lot of people that saw Jesus outside of us.
Yes. Well, and that's what this is trying to address, because I did too until the day I heard this. Like, until the day I heard this, I saw that picture over there and said, there's Jesus.
Actually,
okay? And
Actually, and you saw, you have been seeing the people that sometimes has a photograph and they turn off lights and pray in front of that
picture.
And I did it too.
Yeah. Well, that's why this is saying close your eyes. You know, this says close your eyes. Where is it again? It says you know this if you close your eyes. Mm-hmm. For when you close your eyes, you can find him there. Right? He is a part of you, within you, a being in your soul. So what this is really recommending is that instead of looking at, you know, at the picture over there and saying, there's Jesus, or instead of looking at a statue, we went to St. Louis this past weekend and saw all those wonderful, wonderful statues of Jesus they have there. Have you guys been there yet? Definitely. We should all go together someday. It was really great. But, you know, instead of looking at those statues or instead of looking at that picture and saying, there's Jesus, what this is saying is close your eyes and really notice that the thought of Jesus is in you. Really notice that whatever you think about Jesus, whether you love Jesus and you think that he, you know, that he was love incarnate, or whether you hate Jesus and you think that he was some, you know, fake, you know, whatever you think of Jesus, it's asking you to notice that all of that is in you. That's what it wants you to notice. It doesn't matter what you believe, what you think is true, what you don't think is true, it's in you. Right? There's no way that your ideas of Jesus are separate from you. And that's what this wants you to notice. And of course, you know, we can later take that and we can extend that to our ideas of Tom, right? But we're starting here with our ideas of Jesus. They're completely within you. And then what happened, and again, whenever you read a book, you cannot separate the book from the scribe. Like when you read A Course in Miracles, you can't separate that from who Helen was. And when you read NTI, you can't separate that from what was going on in me as this exercise was happening. Close your eyes and see Jesus. So at the time that this was written, I saw Jesus as, I'll just call it awakeness itself. I saw Jesus as awakeness itself. So when I started to close my eyes and I started to look at that, then where this teaching went is, if that awakeness, that idea of awakeness is there, it's got to be all the way in you too. Like you can't have this, and these weren't just really ideas of awakeness as much as they were, what's the word I'm looking for? It's not really
awareness.
Not feelings either, huh?
Awareness
of awakeness? Yeah, I mean,
it's like
I,
subtle expression.
Yeah. And so if I can have this idea, which is more than an idea, of what awakeness is, instead of projecting that onto Jesus, look and notice it's in me. Something in me knows what awakeness is. How does it know what awakeness is? You know, that's what this is pointing to. All right, so let's go ahead and read, starting with sentence 7. Jesus is a part of you, so that all that he accomplished within you. And that which has been accomplished within you has been accomplished by you, so that it may continue to be accomplished until it has been accomplished in full. So again, what this is pointing at, this is looking very much at what was happening with me at the moment, which is, you know, Jesus is awakeness. And then this is really saying, well, then that awakeness has to be in you, at least a spark of awakeness. And at this point, I would never have believed any more than a spark of awakeness, you know, because of my own state of mind. But at least a spark of awakeness has to be in you. And if there's at least a spark of awakeness, then there's something there that can become a fully accomplished awakeness.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. In order to communicate, it's got to be like itself, you know, or else they can't communicate.
Right. So. I couldn't have a single idea about what awakeness was unless there was something in me that knew it. Yeah. And so it's there already. And guess what? The awakeness is awake. So it's not like, you know, this is like this a completely dark thing. You know, at this time, now this, remember, we're talking about how my frame of mind at the time, I would have seen it as a completely dark thing, like our assignment was in the last week, who I do spiritual practice so that someday I can be light, someday I can be better, someday I can be. And what this is pointing out to me is that awakeness is already right there in you, perfectly and fully awake. Now, all that needs to happen is that awakeness needs to be fully accomplished, you know, complete, without anything else. In fact, there's some place in the course, I think it's in the beginning part, like around the miracles principles or chapter 1, chapter 2, where Jesus says something in the course, and I'm really going to misquote it. It's the idea that will be right, not the words. But basically what he says is he's asking us at this point not to put him on a pedestal. He's saying that he's an elder brother, but he deserves devotion, but only because he's devoted to us, right? And one of the things he says in that area of the course is the only difference between us and him, we're both the same love. The only difference between us and him is that there's nothing left in him but that, right? But the love is the same, or the awakeness is the same. So it's not like we have to achieve awakeness. The awakeness is already present and complete, right? So that's what this is saying as well. So moving on to verses 8 to 14. The universe is in your mind, so that all that has been accomplished by you. And within this universe, the model that rises to the top of your mind is the symbol of the man called Jesus. This is because Jesus represents your true desire. Jesus is the freedom you want to be. Everything else that floats within the universe of the mind is from a past desire and is not your current desire anymore. Now, of course, at this time, I had not yet discovered the other masters that I now respect, like Ramana Maharshi. At this point, Jesus was the only master. So it's kind of like, again, if you look at where my frame of mind was, when I looked at the world, you know, I saw imperfect people and I saw, you know, imperfect situations. And, you know, some things were even less than imperfect. They were horrible, right? They were terrible, completely undesirable. And then Jesus, like this one shining star, right? And so what this is saying is the reason that you are so attracted to Jesus as opposed to something else in this universe is because Jesus represents what you want to realize the most. If you wanted some other experience more, you would be more attracted to some other symbol. So you're so attracted to Jesus simply because you really want to realize this awakeness in yourself more than anything else. And of course, at this time, I still had many other attractions too. It wasn't like I had a pure desire. My desire was very impure, which means it was mixed, right? But this is saying of all of your desires, the desire that is most important to you is your desire to awaken. That's why you see Jesus the way you do. That's why Jesus is so special to you. So it's funny, this isn't making specialness a bad thing, right? This is saying the reason that symbol is so special to you is because this desire is really the most important of all of your desires. It's what you want the most.
What about the Holy Spirit?
What, the Holy Spirit? Well, the way the Course presents it is that Jesus is actually a manifestation of the Holy Spirit. So the Holy Spirit would be the voice for awakeness. And Jesus is a symbol of awakeness.
Okay,
does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yes. And the Holy Spirit is the voice for that clarity or that awakeness or that knowledge, as the Course would put it. Voice for God, yeah. And Jesus is a symbol, a physical symbol of all of that.
Okay. Then Jesus, that he existed, he was real?
I don't know the answer. You could find people that would say he was real, and you can find people that say he wasn't real. So I honestly don't know the answer. And I like to be honest with myself about that. I have personal beliefs, but they're personal beliefs. I don't know the answer. And there are people who have just as strong beliefs that Jesus never existed and the whole story is made up, and they have all their proofs too. So, you know? Yeah.
The reality of Jesus is what he symbolizes.
The reality of Jesus is what he symbolizes. And so, that's true.
So that's the only thing that we do know about Jesus.
Yes.
And so that awakeness or whatever he represents to you, that's the real Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah, very good, Dave. All right, so again, so this is saying all of the other desires, since Jesus is the most important thing to me, all of the other desires then are less important. And they come from a past desire. And the past desire would be the desire that we saw in NTI Romans 2 and 3, which was the wish that things were different than they are, right? That's the past desire, the wish that the truth isn't true. And that past desire made, you know, you could say everything else, and is the father of all of our other desires, right? So there's one true desire, which is the desire to realize again that the truth is true. And then there's all of these other desires, which are the remnants of the past desire, the wish that things were different.
The tiny mad idea.
The tiny mad idea, as the Course says, yeah. Sentence 6 says, you may let the past go. You need not keep anything you do not want. Focus your eyes on Jesus and know the love in your own heart. This is your truth. This is your heart's desire. In surrendering into this truth, you find your joy. So this is recommending what we could call devotion to Jesus. And, you know, Ramana Maharshi recommends the same devotion, not necessarily to Jesus, because the people he talked to wouldn't have been attracted to Jesus. They might have been attracted to him, you know, or they might have been attracted to Shiva, you know. But he is saying it's okay to take this symbol of your awakeness, whether that symbol of your awakeness is Jesus or Ramana Maharshi or Shiva or Nisargadatta Maharaj or Buddha or, you know, Peace Pilgrim, you know. It's okay to take this symbol and love this symbol and be devoted to this symbol at this stage in the awakening process. Because when you're devoted to that symbol, what you're really being devoted to is everything that symbol represents for you. And the more love and attention that you give to that symbol, the more this is going to grow and expand within you, right? And this is often called, in Eastern religions, it's called the path of devotion. And the way they describe the path of devotion is they say as you become more and more and more devoted to your God, you know, whatever your God is, eventually you merge completely with the God. You become that God just through absolute devotion to it. Yes, Dave.
Well, I think that's true with trust as well. Whatever you, if you completely put your trust in something, you become that thing that
yeah.
you trust in. And so, how do you define devotion exactly? Just a love, just a surrender to it, or just a...
Yeah, in this case, I would say those are the perfect two words for me. Love and surrender would be devotion. Love and surrender. Yeah. So... again, it's asking me to focus my eyes on Jesus and just keep focus there, you know? And then I can let all the other things go if I just spend all of my time focused on Jesus. Verses 15 to 18. You are not a slave. You are not a victim. Nothing can be given you that you do not want. You are the free and holy and treasured Son of God. All that you want is yours. And when you look at your brother Jesus, you see what you want. When you look at your brother Jesus, you recognize what is yours. So again, what's happening here is that Holy Spirit is focusing me or us fully on that true desire. So, you know, maybe a moment ago I thought, you know, I want more money. I don't want to be married anymore. I want, you know, whatever. I want less work. I want more money and less work. There we go. More money, less work, you know. But now, now that I'm not thinking about those things, now that I'm fully focused on Jesus, suddenly those things fade in importance, naturally. So it's not like I have to push them away. It's not like I have to convince myself I don't really want more money, I don't really want less work, right? I just focus on Jesus. And because Jesus represents what I really want, that blossoms so full that it's very clear to me in that moment that what I really want is Jesus. What I really want is to realize myself as that same awakeness. And then I'm willing for whatever is in my best interest. Like it results in a shift in your wanting and a shift in your perspective. And this is a practice that has worked really, really well for me. You know, if I thought that I wanted, you know, somebody over there to shut up, you know, she's talking too much and I want her to shut up and I'm annoyed and I want her to shut up and blah, blah, blah. Then what I would learn to do is I would learn to just be still within myself for a moment and then start asking, you know, what do I really want? You know, do I want her to shut up? Or do I want to awaken? Do I want to realize my own awakeness? And in getting in touch with that true desire creates a shift. And where a moment ago I wanted her to shut up, now I'm totally happy with her talking because I'm trusting that everything that's happening is happening to help me awaken, right? So in an instant, my entire perception changes because I've got in touch with my true desire. So it's almost like you have these false desires that are at the head level, and then you have this true desire that's at the heart level. And in order to see everything differently, all you have to do is take a moment to shift from believing this is what you want to realizing, no, this is what I want. And everything's different. And this is the beginning of that teaching, you know, with Jesus as the symbol of what I want, what I really want. Starting with sentence 8. When you look at your brother Jesus, you are not looking outside your mind. You are not seeing the past or looking into the future. Because, you know, we think of Jesus as 2,000 years ago. Or some people might think of Jesus as coming, you know, in the future. There's going to be the second coming of Jesus. This says, when you look at your brother Jesus, you are not looking outside of your mind. You are not seeing the past or looking into the future. When you look at your brother Jesus and you recognize what you want, you are looking into your mind now and seeing him. You are looking in your heart now and recognizing him. You are looking within you now, and you are finding him there, fully accomplished, all that he is, living within your mind. Later, when we get to NTI Galatians, it's going to talk about willingness, which is really just another word for this same true desire, right? And it says that willingness is actually an extension of God. So when you're focused on your willingness, you're actually focused on God. You know, and this is focused on Jesus, you're focused on your awakeness. You can see how they're different words, but they're all talking about the same thing.
Can I just return to the previous paragraph?
You can do anything you like, Tom.
You were talking about, at the end there, wanting, recognizing your true desire.
Yes.
And you got somebody who's yakking and yakking and you wish they'd shut up.
Yeah.
And then you're looking at your
desire.
And then what can be complicated for me, what I found out, is that then the mind tries not to be aggravated. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So what that means is the shift hasn't actually occurred.
Right, right. It's like, okay, well, okay, then don't be aggravated. You should shut up. You know what I mean? And so it's like, again, it's like ego kind of taking charge again of awakening. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, okay, don't get pissed off. You know?
And or you're bad. You're bad for being annoyed with this person. And so...
Yeah, and again, you're weak, you know, and it's futile. good luck with that. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So, but if you keep your focus on, what I'm seeing is now, if you keep your focus on the desire,
yeah,
then it's much easier.
That's the path of devotion. And that's why, for most people on the path of devotion, there are people who can be devoted without a symbol, and now I can be devoted without a symbol. I can be devoted to devotion itself, right? Mm-hmm. But I couldn't originally. Being devoted to devotion itself would have made no sense to me, so I needed a physical symbol, and my first one was Jesus. And then for some reason I got handed off to Ramana, which I don't quite understand, but he worked just as well, you know? I mean, I had nothing to do with the handoff, so it worked perfectly. But, you know, I needed someone, an idea of someone, because obviously there wasn't a physical body there, right? I needed someone to be devoted to. And as long as I could be devoted to Jesus, or later devoted to Ramana, it was very, very helpful to me in staying in my heart. And now, the path of devotion is not for everyone. And that's one of the things that the teachings will tell you. There are different paths because not everyone connects in the same way. So this is talking about the path of devotion right now. And some people are, you know, they could try all day and they're never going to connect to the path of devotion. But for those people that devotion works for, this is a very easy path. You know, just remembering what you really want and letting your symbol... You know, I remember, you know, especially after I got handed off to Ramana, I remember all I would have to do is look at a picture of him. And everything changed for me. Just looking at his picture reminded me of everything I wanted. And it shifted everything. Like that. But that's the path of devotion. And this is why, you know, in America, you know, with the exception of Catholicism, but with most of the Protestant religions, you know, we have this thing against idols. You know, Protestants were really taught that idols are not good. Jewish people also really taught idols not good. Islam, Muslims, idols not good. You won't find a single statue in a Muslim mosque, right? So many of us were raised with the idea that idols are not good. But if you go to India, oh man, everybody, you know, idols. And, you know, one Westerner went to Ramana one time and said something, you know, about all this idol worship around here. I mean, they're just praying to statues. It's ridiculous. And Ramana just said, you don't understand idol worship because it's devotion. The symbol, whether the symbol is a statue or a thought of Jesus, what's the difference? A symbol is a symbol. Now, if you're doing the kind of idol worship where you believe if you pray to this statue, he can, you know, make your crops grow. Maybe that's a little foolish. But if it's just the symbol of your devotion, and when you are looking at that statue or looking at that painting or, you know, looking at that sunset, and the devotion arises in you and you just set within that devotion, what happens to a person on the path of devotion, when they set in the devotion, they become still. The devotion is the path to stillness. It's the path away from the ego. You know, once they go deep into the devotion, the ego hasn't got a chance, at least while they're there. And I am definitely a devoted type. You know, I love to spend time in devotion. And when I'm in devotion, you could say there ain't no ego. When I come out of it, it can come back. But when I'm in devotion, there is no ego. Because when I go so deep into devotion, ego hasn't got a chance. And so the trick for someone that's really bent towards the path of devotion, the trick is to learn to carry that devotion with you all of the time. Even when you get up out of your chair or walk away from your statue, right? To still be able to carry that devotion. Because when you're deep in the devotion, there is no ego. And every time you come out of the devotion and the ego starts japping again, to remember what you really want, what you really love, what you're really attracted to, and to go back into the devotion. And in fact, those of you who have the teachings of Inner Ramana, if you, you know, really look at that book with these ideas in mind, you'll see that book is teaching the path of devotion. The whole mantra is all about learning to be in devotion all day long. You know, he asks you to say the mantra like it's the greatest gift you've ever been given. So what are you becoming devoted to now? Your mantra, right? And every time the ego starts talking again, you say your mantra, I am that I am. And you love that mantra. And that mantra pulls you back into your devotion. When the mantra doesn't work is people who either don't understand devotion or just aren't bent in that direction. You know, the ego starts talking like, I am that I am, I am that I am. Like they're trying to stuff the ego away. That doesn't work because this isn't about repressing the ego. This is about returning to your love. And when you're in your love, and you talk a lot about this in different ways, but you talk about how when you're in that place, then everything is fine. So it's about learning to stay in that place. That's what the path of devotion is. And almost all of us, if we're going to use the path of devotion, we need a symbol. Most of us need a symbol to help us. Whether that symbol is a mantra, Jesus, Ramana, you know, nature. Nature causes some people to feel devoted, right? But the point is to stay in the heart. And in the heart, the ego hasn't got a chance. It's only when you forget the heart and you drift back out again that the ego has a chance.
But it's not bad to pray in front of the picture of Jesus?
No.
No.
No. The error would be if you still believe that Jesus was outside of you and that you were praying to someone other than you. When you realize that the statue of Jesus is just a symbol of devotion for you, and you could call it like a help tool, a helpful tool to get you into your own heart. Do you see the difference?
Uh-huh.
It's a tool to help you get into your own heart, yes.
When I was working at the Transportation Tech Center, there was an Indian man there that was telling me about this, what you're talking about now, and what he was talking about is using forms to represent our devotion. The forms are external, but and what he told me was, he says, I realize that I need to pray to such and such a god, or how did he phrase it? Anyway, he held up a styrofoam cup and he says, for me, this represents my symbol of devotion now, and I need that. You know, for some people, he was saying for some people they need their new car. Yeah, maybe I'm getting a little off track, but the idea is kind of the same. And what he's saying, ultimately, what he was saying is, those things all represent something that we love. And as we refine what we love, we just have to be careful not to judge other people's symbols of devotion. For one person that's a new car, or somebody else that's, you know, who's a little more evolved, that'd be something else. I digressed a little from your point, but the point is that these external symbols represent
the heart,
the love that we feel for our spirit.
Yeah, it's just a tool. And again, you know, many of us in this culture were raised to judge those symbols, right? And what we don't understand sometimes is in judging devotion, we are cutting off one possible path to awakening. We're Xing it out. We're saying, you know what? That's wrong. First of all, look at the feeling of judgment. Could that possibly be spirit? No. It couldn't possibly be spirit. That's ego judging an entire path of awakening so that you don't even attempt it. Right? Yeah.
I would just say also keep the idols at eye level and don't put them up on a pedestal.
Right. Again, it's a matter of understanding that this is just a symbol that helps you go into your own heart. Again, so there is a bit of understanding here. It's right. Not believing that something out there has a power you don't. That would be an error, right? That would be the type of idol worship. That would be idol worship. We're talking about more idol use, as you know. And again, there are plenty of people who love Jesus, that, you know, and just the thought of Jesus throws them directly into their heart, right?
Had an idea. It's the difference between symbol and idol.
Symbol and idol,
so,
yes.
So symbol would be an external representation of the love we feel in our heart.
Yes.
Idol would be, which we were saying earlier, looking up to
someone. Yeah, it has a power I don't. That would be an idol, yeah. So we're talking about symbols here. And in fact, if you look at the words here, it keeps saying that, you know, Jesus is a symbol. That's how the whole thing started. Jesus is a symbol of all that is possible with you. So Jesus is a symbol. Okay, so let's look at the last part here, verses 19 to 23. You are eternal, as all of eternity is within you. God is eternity, and the extension of God is you. But you have shut off your mind to the eternity that is there. You have looked away and promised to look at only a fragment of your mind. This is why you believe in time. You believe a fragment is now and everything else is not now. But everything is now. Eternity is in your mind and you are in the mind of eternity. And Jesus, who shares your mind with you, is the symbol of your recognition that this is true. So again, Jesus, you know, Jesus overcame death, right? Jesus was resurrected. So Jesus is the symbol of eternal life. And this is saying, this is another reason why I love Jesus. It's because something in me knows that eternal is what I am. And I'm attracted to Jesus because he represents that knowledge, right? But again, it's only saying that all of these things are already in me. And I love Jesus because he represents that, and I don't believe it about me yet. Right? Close your eyes. Jesus is in your mind. He is nowhere else. You know him and experience him nowhere else. Jesus is in your mind now. He is a part of you. So let's say that I'm going to go on the path of devotion. And let's say that this lady right here, for some reason, maybe this is a Buddha. This is a Buddha. It's not even a lady, right? This is a Buddha. Isn't that what this is? Do you know? Yeah, you're Buddhist. What is this? We don't know. Okay. Well, anyway, she's going to be my symbol. So she's my symbol, right? So this is the way that devotion sometimes works. So in the morning, I get up, you know, ego, right, got up with me, right? Me and ego, we got up, and I did the things I had to do, right, got Jasmine off to school, whatever. Now the house is quiet, and I know I want to go to my heart, and I've got ego with his stories. So I come here, and I sit in front of her, because she represents the love. She represents my desire for awakening. She represents stillness. She represents peace. And I sit in whatever way is comfortable for me, you know, I sit with her. And I look at her. And as I look at her, something starts to shift in me. The ego is starting to get quieter. I'm starting to get in my heart. I'm starting to just feel the love. I'm starting to just be still. You know, she's an aid. And there's a natural quietness that is occurring as I just sit and look at her. And in fact, the truth is, in my house, and most of you have been to my house, you haven't yet, and you haven't yet, but most of you have been to my house. If you came to my house and let me give you a tour, what you would find is there's a symbol on almost every wall of my house. So no matter where I sit, I have something to look at that means something to me, that quiets me. Right? I could say, this is what this represents, and this is, I could take you around my whole house. There won't, probably the only place where you won't find a symbol is in Jasmine's room. Nope, there's one in there too. She's got the little elephant guy. What's his name? Ganesh. She has a Ganesh I gave her in there. I could look at Ganesh. But, and my symbols are mixtures. Some of them are Christian. Some of them are Hindu. Some of them are cowboy, to be perfectly honest. You know, but some are Native American. Right? But they all represent something. And just the looking, because of what she represents, quiets me. And then at some point, after I'm quiet enough, I'll start to feel the guidance. I might feel guidance to read something. I might feel guidance to write something. I might feel guidance just to close my eyes and to continue to be still. But now the ego has been displaced by love, with the aid of a symbol, right? And again, the symbol could be a physical symbol like this statue or a picture, or it could just be the idea of Jesus. Just thinking about Jesus could quiet you if Jesus means that much to you. Or thinking about Ramana could quiet you. So they're kind of like, you could think of these symbols, whether they're physical symbols or mental symbols, or a mantra, I am that I am. Be still. Oh, one of the most famous symbols in the world is be still and know that I am God. That's just a symbol. It's this, and you can think of the symbols as like roads. You take the road from your head to your heart by spending enough time with the symbol. And again, a mantra is another type of symbol. Some people watching their breath is the symbol. Right? So that's the path of devotion. And that's really what this was talking about today. So this is an assignment that you'll have to decide for yourself whether you want to follow, because again, maybe some of you just aren't naturally bent towards devotion. If so, you might not have success with it. I don't want anybody forcing themselves. But if you haven't tried the path of devotion, or you do know it works for you, but you don't do it often enough, right? Maybe take some time this week just to find a symbol, whether no matter what it is, that's meaningful to you, whether it's a mantra, whether it's a picture, whether it's a statue, a song. It could be a song. It could be music, right? It could be a walk in nature. Start to notice what naturally quiets you, naturally. And then start to spend more time with that. Yes?
I have a question. Why every time when I try to meditate, actually my body relax, and sometimes a little bit of my mind quiet, but always I feel pain in this shoulder.
You have a pain in your shoulder?
Uh-huh.
Oh, I don't know the answer to that. Does anybody else know?
I don't know.
Have an answer for that?
And that made me stop.
Yeah.
I don't know. The other day I was thinking maybe it can be the ego that don't want me to.
Well, it's possible, but what I would say is I honestly believe that awakening is natural. So if some spiritual practice becomes too difficult, then I recommend trying something else. I think there's an easy way for everyone. And so the trick is, so meditation, the physical, old-fashioned, sitting in one place meditating, isn't for everyone. And some people, if you think it's for you and it's not, and you're trying to force yourself, you're just going to frustrate yourself. What works for me is devotion, as I just talked about, and another is what I call contemplation. Reading something spiritual, but very, very slowly. Like reading one or two sentences and then just sitting with that, you know. And then when the mind starts to kick up again, reading one or two more sentences. So really slow contemplative reading works really well for me. Also writing actually works very, very well for me. Writing from within myself. For some people, those things would be hard and other things are easier. So experiment with different things and find what works for you. You'll recognize it yourself. You know, you'll recognize it yourself. Peace Pilgrim awoke by taking walks in nature. So, and that's kind of what I'm talking about this week. Find what naturally quiets you. Don't try to force yourself into, I should be quiet when I'm doing this. Try to find what works for you naturally.
I think for me, a helpful hint on that is to find something that I'm devoted to. Find something that's devoted to me also. Because
yeah.
that To me, that's just right there, you know. I mean, I feel like with Jesus or something like that, or even with a teacher, like I can feel devotion from a teacher.
Yes.
You know, so that there's that connection where it's like, you know, equal.
Well, that's, you know, and that, of course, is the Hindu way, is to be devoted to your guru. And, of course, you have to have a trustworthy guru, right? But that works for people when they have a trustworthy guru and they're devoted to their guru, because you know what? It's the same thing. And again, Westerners often judge that, but that's just not understanding. You know, when I think about my guru, when I listen to my guru, I naturally become still, right? So yeah, and I'm sure there are other symbols that we haven't discussed here. But anything that naturally takes you into your heart easily is helpful. Because you can't be in the heart and in the ego at the same time. It's impossible. All right, so I'm going to stop the recorder. We went a little longer than usual tonight, but I think that's okay. What we'll do is we'll take a short, quiet time, and then we'll talk.